Hey, if it is Monday, it is time to appreciate art for just a moment. And by golly, the whole world is art. We've had some absolutely gorgeous days. The blues are the bluest, the greens are the greenest, the yellows are the yellowest. And some of us are just kind of appreciating the living daylights out of that. Annie Dugan joins us this morning, our host for Where's Art? Howdy there, sunshine.
Hello, Lisa. I mentioned to Chris last week that one of the most interesting things in the last few months is making us realize how incredibly large and incredibly local at the same time.
Annie, we lost you. Oh, we lost you. Your phone started to break up there. So,
Oh, dear.
Now you're clear. You said how incredibly large and how incredibly local, and then you went...
Oh, no. Our wonderful arts world is what I was going to say, and what a... how we can sort of live in both worlds at the same time. And the Metropolitan Museum of Art is a... organization that is an institution that has been around for 150 years, which actually isn't all that long when we think about the long arc of history. And they are celebrating this 150th year in a very interesting year for all of us in 2020. And they have an exhibition that actually opens at the end of August, and it'll open in person as well as online. And they have some information about it up online right now. It's called Making the Met, 1870 to 2020. And it's really about the formative moments that changed the trajectory of the museum. And it's a wonderful wonderful exhibition to look at the role of museums in our culture, because right now we're having a real reckoning and a real reevaluation of these institutions as we kind of think about, well, are they, you know, what are these institutions built on and how do we want them to go forward? I mean, because at the beginning they were all about collecting objects, and the provenance, which is a fancy word for where those came from, is sometimes, you know, maybe not not the best
stuff
way
was,
that it came
stuff
into
was,
the museum.
Stuff was taken.
Stuff was stolen.
It
right,
was stolen.
Exactly.
I think Christina Woods put it beautifully when we talked about this once on the show. She said, when you go, you want to look at whose story is being told, who's telling the story, and whose stories are not being told.
Sure, and I think that this is a great opportunity to look at how institutions have done that in the past and also how they're doing it going forward. So they're really saying, the exhibition is, you go to the Met's website, and the exhibition is up on the website, and you can sort of see, they have sort of information. It's almost like you go, imagine yourself, you know, walking into your kitchen. And what's great is you can bring a cup of coffee when you look at it online.
Oh, I love that. And you can always bring
coffee in the museum.
You can always have snacks. You can always have coffee. You can always bring your dogs. I love this.
You can bring your dogs to the virtual museum.
This whole online thing, I am so grooving with this whole online thing. So it makes being a hermit so much more fun.
Right. Well, and so they're looking at 10 sort of moments in the Met's history. So, you know, when they started as collecting institution, when they sort of, what is the role of the national identity in a museum? All these really interesting ways that that museums intersect with our life, our culture, our politics, our history. Because when we think of, you know, museums, the Met is a museum with a capital M. You know, this idea of a collecting, of a encyclopedic museum, where they really say, you know, okay, let's make sure that we have 5,000 years of art history from this part of the world and this part of the world. But, you know, obviously it's being told from a very specific perspective. So I think the exhibition tries to tell that as well. And while you are at the Met Museum website, because I spent a lovely amount of time looking over it yesterday, they have a whole series of what they call Met Stories. stories. So definitely go to treat yourself to the Making of the Met exhibition. But then while you're on the website, you can also look at these Met stories. And these are right around 5 minutes long. So, you know, if you're sort of sick of if you're like me, you might have a shorter attention span. I think a lot of us have had this phenomenon where our attention spans have gotten dramatically shorter. So they have these 5 minute movie clips all about different stories that intersect at the Met. So they have a love story of people falling in love at the Met. They have one that my favorite is this story about Daniel Bergman, who is a gentleman with autism, and it's all about his discovery, sort of this life discovery that he made while he was in the koi pond at the Met Museum, where he finally realized that visuals and auditory information, those two sensory pieces that are coming into your brain, can be connected. And he discovered that through art and then just kept going back to the museum because art offered this wonderful way of slowing the world down. And when we think about, you know, sensory inputs and how overwhelming those can be, that the museum offered this way where he could stand in quiet and just contemplate one visual input piece at a time. And yes, granted, there's a lot going on in some of those pieces, but you could sort of self-select for those. So really surprising and interesting stories that we might not normally know are on that Making the Met and Met stories. So you can take a little trip to the Metropolitan this afternoon from the comfort of your home. And I want to bring up another sort of separate story. I love when we can talk about the intersection of art and agriculture, because I sort of stand on that crossroads in my life on the farm and in art. And there was a wonderful story that Lisa sent me about a scientist in Australia who this study has been around for a while. It's been done numerous times, but they just did one recently as well, looking at painting eyes on the back of a cow's butt to protect against predators. So they did a whole series. This is a a problem for farmers having their cows taken by predators, so lions, leopards, that sort of thing. Well, the scientists painted. On some, they didn't paint anything. On some, they painted X's. And on some, they painted eyes. So it looked like the cow was looking at whatever predator was coming there. And I think the reason I'm bringing this up is it is showing the importance of visual signals to the animal world as well as the human world, that we live with visual signals throughout our lives, and they mean certain things. So we've seen this before in, like, moths and butterflies, right, where some caterpillars have markings that make it look like they have really large eyes. And it is sending a visual signal to the world that you shouldn't eat me. But it's just, I think it's always wonderful when we can stop and pause. Like you said at the beginning, the world is a beautiful world right now. And let's stop and pause and just wonder with curiosity at it. And that's our week in art, Lisa.
And let us contemplate just briefly what else and where else we could paint eyes.
Everywhere. Let's paint eyes.
I'm just thinking.
Constantly looking.
It really is interesting, you know, when an animal, for example, looks us in the eye, how do they know where to look?
Mm-hmm.
Because our faces don't look like their faces. So how do they know where the eyes are? But they figure it out because that's so important.
Yep.
Annie, it's always a treat to talk with you. I missed you last week. It's great to have these conversations, and let's do it again next week, shall we?
Absolutely. Thanks, Lisa.
All right. Annie Dugan this morning, our host for Where's Art, a regular feature of Mondays right here on 103.3 KUMD.